Good morning, everybody. How are we doing? We're in this wonderful series called People Meeting Jesus. And I'm going to actually start off with a game I want to call you into and see if someone wants to. It's going to be People Meeting Ping Pong, okay? And so, but actually, it's not ping pong. It's a game that I'm making up right now. It actually can help you with ping pong, you know, if you actually do this on a regular basis. But I want to know, Tony, you're not allowed to do this because he's really good at ping pong. But I want to know if somebody wants to engage me in a game that involves two ping pong paddles and two balls. Anybody want to try? And here's the game. Just simply see how many times you can keep going like this without dropping the ball. Okay? All right? Do I have two people that want to do it head to head? Okay, Lori, come on up. Tammy, come on up. All right, let's cheer them on, guys. Okay? Woo! Yeah. All right. All right. Ladies. Your blades of victory, here we go. All right, your balls of infamy. Okay, here we go. So now, we're going to have you guys just one side, okay? And, oh, hugs, okay, that's good. This is not competition. Come on now. All right, so, ready? Okay, let's cheer them on. Let's see who can do it the longest. Ready? On your mark, get set, go. Oh, Lori wins the first round. Okay, all right. Okay, ready? Let's try it. We're going to do best of three. Best of three, okay? All right, best of three. So don't break out of sweat now. Okay, ready? Mark, get set, go. Oh, she's getting hot. Tammy, I think your mistake is you're using too much strength. Okay, all right, Lori, you took it. Lori, keep going, Lori. Oh, yay. All right, let's give the ladies a hand. Tell them. That's it. I was going to throw more at you.
Well done.
But, well done. All right, Tony, get up here. Come on, let's go. You and me, head to head. I'm gonna up the game, okay? Here we go. All right, so here's what you and I are going to play since I know you're a ping pong baller. All right, so on every five, you got to flip it and hit on the other side. Every five, okay? Ready, buddy? Here we go. Go. I don't know. Is it? Oh, I went off the edge. Give it up for Tony. Man, I thought I could take you. Oh, way to go, buddy. You almost lost it there at the beginning. I got cocky. Okay. All right. Okay, so along those lines, let me find my clicker. Do I have my clicker? There it is. I want to ask you if you know who this person is, and it's related to what we just did. Anybody know who that person is? By the way, good morning. I'm Pastor Jason for anybody that's new this morning. I pastor here sometimes, and I'm just kidding. Anybody know who that is? Of course you don't know who that is, but when I show you this next picture, you'll know exactly who it is. This man's name is Joel, and that's his wife, Joan Pritchard. And guess what game they created? Not ping pong. Pickleball. Very good. They're the creators of pickleball. It's actually kind of a cool story. It was the summer of 1965, and the Pritchards had a little house in Washington they like to go to on the coast. And so Joel on the left side was in his 40s, and he had a little snotty son, about 13, that he came home to the beach house, who was complaining. Big surprise. Nothing to do here, Dad, right? And so his dad's like, well, son, you know, when I was a kid, you know, they always pull that one out, right? When I was a kid, we used to make up games, da-da-da. And so his snotty little son said, well, why don't you go make up a game, Dad? And so he was like, challenge accepted. So he went to with a buddy of his to the garage. And they pulled out a badminton net, and they grabbed some ping pong paddles, and they found a wiffle ball, and they went out to the badminton court, and they made this game, and boom, the first game of pickleball was born. That's where it started. And so they played it all through the summer, and the family just got into it. And then one day, they're sitting around talking about, like, what do we call this thing, right? And so Joanne, the wife, she said, let's call it pickleball. And they're like, what? Pickleball, why? Well, interestingly enough, Joanne grew up in Marietta, Ohio, where my dad went to school for 1 year. Ask him about that story. And Joanne loved to watch the regattas. She was really into the rowing team there because it's on the Ohio River. And so it was a big deal to her. And so she used to love and go watch the regattas. And so they were now on the West Coast, and every now and then Marietta College would come and compete against the schools there. So what's interesting is that you have the best of the best, the varsity players always row, right? They're the ones they pick and they put in the races and the regattas. But then after the races are all over, the prizes have been won, what's left over at the regattas is all the second stringers and third and fourth stringers. They hang out and they can't wait because there's called pickle boats there, and they all get together and they have their own races and they call them the pickle boat races. And so not only would you stay, if you're a real fan like Joanne Pritchard, you would stay to watch the pickle boat races because it's all the guys that are the leftovers, the ragtags that didn't make the varsity squad, and they would have these races, and it was so much fun to watch. Isn't that interesting? So that's why she said, let's call it pickleball, because you threw together a badminton net and ping pong paddles and this and that, and here you have this game. Let's call it pickleball. So now you know something you didn't know before. And maybe also something you didn't know before is that this is actual vintage footage of the very first pickleball game ever played in the Lorain campus, okay? Very first. I mean, this is history right here, okay? So there's Aaron and Jake playing against Jerry and Joanne, and they're playing in our gym. And then also, so much that we love this game that this is court number two in our building here. We have two racquetball courts, and one is dedicated to pickleball. Did you guys know that? And I call this, maybe I'll get quoted for this someday, I call this pickle wall, because you can play off the wall. Get it? Get it, pickle wall? Okay, all right. All right, so if you ever want to play some pickle wall, it's always set up. It's down there. We got paddles and balls and everything. It's a lot of fun. And so anyway, that I just think it's, what I love about this story is that pickleball is a reference to this whole thrown together, the second stringers. And we're going to see a story today where you're going to have opponents, it might seem, that are against each other playing a game. And I'm going to call it basically Simon and Jesus' pickleball game, all right? We're meeting people today with Jesus, and the person that we're going to focus on today is a guy named Simon. And no, they don't literally play pickleball, okay? But there is a game afoot. There's a game being played in this story we're going to read today. And I want you to really enter into it along the lines of what we just heard. And so I'm actually setting up the net. You see it? There's the net between Simon and Jesus. And we're going to basically, you're going to see that there's a volley going back and forth between Simon and Jesus throughout this whole story. And I tell you this because as we read it, I want you not to miss it. I want you to see the volley happening between the two of them. Because it really is, to me, it kind of reminds me of a good old-fashioned pickleball or tennis or game where it's back and forth between these two. And here's the thing I want you to also see. Because we're talking about people meeting Jesus, we typically read this story with in mind not just Simon, but then the woman who's also involved in the story. And a lot of attention gets caught up in the comparisons between the two, which we'll do a little bit of that today. But I actually want you to see that what we're doing today is we're talking about people meeting Jesus, individuals. And we're going to really focus in on Simon. So walk with me through that as we do that. Because I think this story itself, you can focus so much on the woman that you miss out on Jesus meeting Simon and why he is with Simon. And so don't miss out on that today. You with me? Okay. All right, with no further ado, turn to Luke chapter 7, if you got your Bibles. And if not, then you can go ahead and stand with me. And it's also on the screen, Luke chapter 7. And again, because we're focusing on Simon, there's some verses I'm going to leave out. Because next Sunday when Pastor Jim preaches, he's going to focus primarily on the woman meeting Jesus, okay? Because in some ways, both the Simon and the woman are meeting Jesus face-to-face for the first time in the story. So here we go. Luke chapter 7. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him. So Jesus went to his home and sat down to eat. And then the very next thing that happens in 37 and 38 is where the woman comes in. And we all know this story. A woman enters in and crying and weeping, and she anoints Jesus' feet. You with me? You know the story, right? And so then it moves on. I forgot to grab my Bible too, sorry. And so it moves on then to verse 39, and it says, when the Pharisee who had invited Jesus, right, saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him. She is a sinner. And then Jesus answered his thoughts. Simon, he said to the Pharisee, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher, Simon replied. And then Jesus told him a story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other. But neither of them could repay. So he gladly and kindly forgave them both, canceling their debts. Who do you suppose loved him more after that? Well, Simon answered, I suppose the one for whom he canceled the larger debt. That's right, Jesus said. And then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, look at this woman kneeling here. When I entered your home, you didn't offer me water to wash the dust from my feet, but she has washed them with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not greet me with a kiss, but from the time I first came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head, but she has anointed my feet with rare perfume. I tell you, her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love, but a person who is forgiven little shows only little love. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. Thank you. Isn't that an awesome passage? Now, again, what we're going to try to do today, we're not going to ignore the woman by any means. We're going to talk about her, but our primary focus is on Simon meeting Jesus, okay? And here's the thing that I think is interesting is that we often get caught up when we talk about the Pharisees and the story of Jesus and the Gospels. We often get caught up and think of Jesus and the Pharisees as opponents, like on either side of the court, right? And that they're like not just opponents, but they're like from rival schools that hate each other, all right? And that's kind of how we think of the Pharisees. We think of them in this light. We think of them in this sense that Jesus is against them and trying to take them down just like they're trying to take him down. But I want to change your thinking on that today because I think Luke is a masterful storyteller. Luke, the disciple of Jesus, who came after the disciples. He was one that was with Paul and came in the scene, and he was not a direct disciple, but he was writing the story of Jesus' life. Remember, this whole book of Luke is an account he gives to try and firm up the faith of a man who is not a Jew but a Gentile, who was a ruler named Theophilus, who he's trying to show him, I want to firm up your faith in Christ, everything that you've been taught, so that you will know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, okay? And so as Luke is writing this, he's trying to convince this man and firm him up. And I think it's so masterful what Luke does because remember last week's sermon? Remember last week's text? What was the last thing that we remember Jesus saying as Jesus was basically telling everyone, hey, this is what people say about John the Baptist, and this is what people are saying about me. And it's slander. It's not right. What was it they were saying about Jesus? That he was a drunkard, a glutton, and he hung out with what kind of people? Sinners, tax collectors, the lowest of the low, right? And what did he do that was so scandalous with them? He would eat with them. Okay, now, what's the big deal about that, right? But that was the last thing Jesus said, and then the very next story that Luke includes, remember, Luke's not giving a detailed account of what he saw. Luke researched everything and interviewed people, so he has kind of the liberty to put things together where he wants them, and he's putting them into a timeline. But the last thing that he wrote about was how Jesus said, this is what people are saying about me. I sit and I eat with sinners. And the very next story is Jesus sitting and eating with who? A Pharisee, the very people that were slandering him. Now, isn't that kind of ironic? Isn't that masterful on Luke's part? He's actually pointing out, he's putting that together to say, yeah, that's what people are saying about Jesus, but let me give you an example of a time Jesus actually went and sat down with a Pharisee. Because he didn't just sit with the sinners. He actually went to the Pharisee's house once. Let me tell you that story. That's how we're entering into this today. And I hope already your mind is changing about these Pharisees that we seem to vilify. And so back to the text, one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with them. And then Jesus went to his home and sat down. And the word is actually reclined at the table. Now, don't miss this, guys. Simon invited Jesus over. Think about that. He invited him. And in that day, in the first century, when you invited someone to your home, it was a big deal. It was a big deal. I mean, we think of it that way too, but it's even bigger of a deal then. Like, for example, I remember the first time I got invited over to Jeff's house after Jeff and Lori were married, and we got invited over there, and we were there with other people, of course, you know. So it was cool and it was comfortable, right? So I went to their house, and it felt really special to me because I knew it was their house. I was part of their wedding, and so it was really cool to be able to see them in their element, you know, and that was special to me. You know, the first time I got to go to Debbie's house and during 2020 and in her other house, your other apartment. And Debbie and I didn't go in the house, but we walked because we didn't go in houses with people then that day. We walked the neighborhood, right? When you get invited over, it's a sense of intimacy, and it was even more so in the first century. So it's surprising. It's like, why would a Pharisee invite Jesus? But even more so the question, why would Jesus accept? If they're slandering him, if they're saying things that aren't true, why in the world would Jesus accept that? Because in a sense, when you accept an invitation to someone's house, you're actually saying to them, if we sit down to eat together, we're okay. And didn't Jesus just say, they said this stuff about him, so we're not okay? Why would he go and eat at their house? Let that sink in for a second. Because, you know, if it were you and I, and there was all kinds of stuff being said about certain people in my life, and it was a whole group of people, and though one of those people invited me over to their house, I'd be like, quick, no, absolutely not. I'm not going to your house, and I'm, no way. What would my sinners and my prostitutes and tax collectors think if I went to their house? I mean, it would not, you know. But even still, Jesus still accepted. Now, I just find that really, really interesting. Now, I think you understand, reading the story with me, that there's something else going on. There's something at a deeper level going on, isn't there? Okay? And that is that there's some false pretense happening. What do I mean by that? I mean that instead of Simon, you know, really wanting to get to know Jesus and wanting to hear from him, there is some false pretense. There's something else going on where you're kind of like, this doesn't add up, you know? Why is he doing this? What's his real motive, right? You're kind of asking that question. And equally, you know, it's interesting. There's only two named Pharisees that actually got with Jesus that are named and that met with him in some kind of a way, right? Who's the other one? Quiz for you, Bible students. Who's the other Pharisee that's named in the Bible that actually met with Jesus in an intimate way like this? Nicodemus, very good. And if you have your Bibles, just turn real quick to John chapter 3. I want you to see and compare something, and you're going to do more of this in your life group today or this week. I put it in the questions to dig a little deeper into this. But just notice, when we talk about false pretense, when we talk about something else going on underneath the surface, maybe you see that with Nicodemus. Notice it in verse 1 of chapter 3. There was a man named Nicodemus, a Jewish religious leader who was a Pharisee. Same tribe as Simon. They probably know each other, right? And after dark one evening, he came to speak with Jesus. Rabbi, he said, we all know that God has sent you to teach us. Your miraculous signs are evidence that God is with you. And so then Jesus replied, I tell you the truth, unless you're born again, you cannot see the kingdom of God. And then we know chapter 3 of John, don't we? We know that chapter because it's in that intimate moment that Jesus is talking to Nicodemus that he utters one of the greatest verses that summarize the gospel like no other verse in the Bible. You all know the verse, John 3:16. Folks, he said that to Nicodemus. He said that to Nicodemus, a guy who came to Jesus. And why was he coming to him in the night, folks? He didn't want anybody else to see him. Okay? And so it's interesting that Nicodemus is coming, but you can tell there's some faith in Nicodemus' heart. Now, in this passage, I don't know what we can tell about Simon. By what he says and what he thinks, we see that there is some false pretense. Because Nicodemus did it quiet at night because he didn't want everybody to see that he was becoming a follower of Jesus. Simon, I'm not so sure he's a follower at all. You got to ask yourself, why did he invite Jesus? Because it's a very public place. It's not just Jesus that's there. There's other people, right? And so Simon's doing this for all to see. But you know what's interesting about Jesus? I love Jesus. He's so awesome. He's a willing participant. You can write that down. He's a willing participant. And that's just fascinating to me. And this furthers my thought that Jesus had a heart for the Pharisees, guys. He had a heart for the Pharisees. I mean, why would he give the greatest summary of the gospel to a guy named Nicodemus who came to him on kind of shady terms at night? He still gave him the gospel. And then you have this guy under false pretenses, invites Jesus over, maybe trying to trap him, maybe trying to figure him out. Who knows what he had in mind? But Jesus is willing. Can I just say that we all come to Jesus in that way, in some way or another? We have our motives, we have our reasons, we have our false pretenses, and we come to Jesus. We even may accept him into our life, but then we have our little reservations and our little list of things that we should have and all that, but Jesus still comes willingly. He says, I'll walk with you. I'll help you grow. If you think about it, it's what he did with the disciples. I mean, if you're watching The Chosen, and please come, we rescheduled for this Wednesday because of the tornado watch last Wednesday. We're going to be back together this Wednesday night. There won't be kids men, but bring them anyway. We're going to have a party. It'll be fun, okay? But 6 o'clock this Wednesday, we're going to do Chosen Season 4, Episode 1. But if you watch The Chosen, it's so cool how Jesus gets involved in the disciples' lives, and they're kind of a wreck. They all come in with their own motivations and their own preconceived notions about Jesus and about what they want, but Jesus is a willing participant. Come and live with me. Come and camp with me. Come and walk with me. Follow me. No matter what your motives are, I want you with me. I just love Jesus being a willing participant. And then, of course, you guys know what happens next. We have this picture, which is kind of a neat representation of that moment. We know what happens next. We'll study this more next week with Pastor Jim. A woman comes in. I mean, it doesn't look good, guys. It does not look good. To someone who may know of this woman, and that makes me wonder, why did the Pharisee know who she was? Interesting. I don't know. But he knew who she was and what she did for a living. And so to others, it was scandalous. Like, what is she trying to get out of him? And they're all, you know, immediately he's thinking things. And so let's look at that text. I love how this captures Simon. This dude's like, that look of disgust. Like, what is going on, right? But look at the text. Let's go back to our text again. When the Pharisees who invited him, that's Simon, saw this, he said to himself. Now, nobody here hears what he's saying. He's not mumbling under his voice. He's speaking this to himself. We do this all the time. He says to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him. She's a sinner. Okay? So there's an internal conversation going on in Simon, and he's looking at Jesus. His eyes are on Jesus. If this man, so he's not looking at the woman, he's looking at Jesus. He's locked on him, and his disgust is, and his contempt is growing. If he knew, if he really was a prophet, that's number one, then he would also know she's a sinner, and he shouldn't be touching her because she's making him unclean. So he's just lost all respect for Jesus. And then it says, Jesus answered his thoughts. That's like my favorite three words from the whole text. Jesus answered his thoughts? What? What is that? I mean, seriously? I mean, that's scary, all right? So like, if we think we're going to get by with anything with our Lord, don't even try. He answered Simon's thoughts and said, Simon, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher, Simon replied. So, back to the pickleball game. You ready? Simon thought. Simon had a thought. And then guess what happened? Jesus answered. I mean, that's crazy. That's like being on the side of the pickleball, and you're thinking, I'm going to hit it to the left, and of course, Jesus is already there. all right? Because he knows where it's coming. And so that's what's happening here. Jesus answers his thoughts. And what are Simon's thoughts? Simon's thoughts are condemnation. Condemnation, primarily for Jesus. Because like I told you, his eyes are on Jesus. And he is condemning Jesus. He's crossing off on his list, not a prophet, okay? Crossing off, not a holy man. Condemnation for Jesus, not one of us. That's what he's saying. But then Jesus' answer is interesting. He gives revelation. Now, what do I mean by that? Revelation? Yeah, all Jesus said is, Simon, I have something to say to you. Something to say. And right now, Jesus is getting ready to give revelation. You're like, what? The last book of the Bible? No, I'm not talking about the book of Revelation. I'm talking about what revelation means. Look at what revelation means. A surprising and previously unknown fact, especially one that is made known in a dramatic way. Are we getting some drama in the story? Yes, we are. Another part of revelation is something that God has to say that's divine, of a divine origin, that speaks to the things of man. That's revelation. Simply Jesus saying, I want to tell you something, Simon. And Simon saying, go ahead, say it. That is Jesus saying, I want to give you revelation. Something you did not know before, Simon. And this is another reason I believe that Jesus is trying to reach Simon. That he is caring for Simon. That he cares about Simon's heart. He has something to say. Hey, folks, be careful when you invite Jesus over for dinner. Okay? I mean, Simon had no clue what he was getting himself into when he offered the invitation to Jesus and Jesus accepted. You got to be ready for anything, especially when Jesus opens his mouth. All right? That same mouth created the universe, and now he's sitting at my table. I mean, think about that, okay? So watch what happens next. Jesus says this. He answered him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he answered, say it. And I love that. Say. This is why your sermon title is called Simon Says, okay? Because Simon said, say it, Jesus, okay? And so Simon says, and what does Jesus, well, let's talk about what he says, okay, first. He says, say it, okay? And I just find that comical. I don't know. I'm just a weirdo. I think about Simon Says. But then Jesus does this amazing thing where he presents something. Simon says, go ahead and say it. He gives permission, which again, that's interesting to me. Jesus, the creator of the universe, asks for permission to speak. Why would he do that? Again, custom. What's proper in that day? You would not just begin to speak into somebody's life at the dinner table. You're being hosted. So Jesus asks permission. I have something to say to you. And then he gives permission. That's kind of interesting. Again, customs of the day. So now Jesus then presents a parable. Anybody know what a parable is? What's a parable? It is a, Dad? A story with a point. A story that makes a point and has a purpose. So let's review the parable real quick. And Jesus loved parables. He loved to tell stories. This is one of his shortest ones. Is this tiny little parable he shares with Simon. Watch what he says. Then Jesus told him this story. And again, with permission, he shares the story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other, but neither of them could repay him, so he kindly forgave them both, canceling their debts. So who do you suppose loved him more after that? Now, what's interesting about this story, and we all get caught up in it, and we all see it here, it's such a powerful story about what was happening right there in that room. Go back to the picture in your mind of the woman kneeling at Jesus' feet. You talk about dramatic. You talk about the drama of the game happening. You see who's loving more right there in that moment. We all get it. But I think what we miss in that comparison of we focus so much on comparing Simon to the woman that we miss what they have in common. Do you see in the text what the two have in common? Like, they're dead even in this regard. Dead even. What are they even in? Neither person in the story could repay him. Neither person could repay him. So that's a piece in this in the parable I want you to see that levels the playing ground for every one of us. None of us can repay our debt. And we often overskip that. We miss it. Simon and the woman both stand level ground. They both have a debt they cannot repay. And so Simon heard this. Simon heard it. Simon hears the story, but you guys all know the difference between hearing something and what? Really listening. That's why I like Samuel, another S in the Bible. Go back to Samuel and read it. Boy Samuel is with his mentor, the high priest Eli. And in the night, Samuel's in bed and he hears someone calling his name. So he runs right to Eli. And then Eli's like, what? No, it wasn't me. Goes back to bed. Hears the name again. Runs to Eli. Well, no, it wasn't me. Goes back to bed. And then he hears the name again and he comes to Eli a third time. And then all of a sudden, Eli realizes God's calling him. It took Eli a minute to figure it out. Of course, Samuel, he had no clue. What does the voice of God sound like? This is his first time. And so then Eli wisely teaches him and says, when you go back to bed, son, when you hear that voice again, and this is after the second time maybe, or the third time, just simply say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. And you know what? In a way, in this story, Jesus is calling, Jesus is like Eli, in a sense, calling the ignorant Simon to listen and saying, you need to tune into the voice of God because you haven't heard it yet. And I'm trying to tune you into the voice so that you don't just hear me, but I'm telling you the story so that you'll actually listen. Okay? And in that moment where Jesus is telling this story, folks, I want you to see that this is a big, bold sign on the road, bigger than ones that Misny puts his face on, okay? And it's a sign that says, Simon, you're invited. Jesus is inviting Simon to his table. Just like Simon was inviting Jesus to his table, Jesus is saying, I have a table I want to invite you to, Simon. It's a table that I'm preparing, okay? And so you're like, what are you talking about? Well, here's the thing, is that Jesus is about to give Simon a debt ledger. You know, everybody, some of you accountants in here know what a ledger is. I wish that Bill and Margaret were here. Margaret does accounting over at LCCCCCCC. And so she knows about debt ledgers. Anybody know? We all know about debt ledgers, right? We all have had them, right? So a ledger is something that's kept. It's written down about what you owe, right? So see, Jesus is about to hand out to Simon his debt ledger, okay? And Jesus is going to lay that out in a way that's very dramatic. And you can't miss it. I can't miss it. Here's how he starts. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon. Now, again, this was a big moment in the text for me that just blew up my mind. I never noticed this before. Notice what he did, guys. He turned to the woman. And remember that picture? I meant to dwell on that picture a little bit more. In those days, they didn't sit in chairs. They laid on little mats or on the floor on their sides. And then that's why when the woman came in, she would just come along at kind of Jesus' level and be, you know, crying and cleaning his feet. And so it was kind of a different look than what we think of chairs and people, little poor ladies under the table. And no, it wasn't anything like that. But he turns to the woman. See, Simon's across the table. He turns to the woman, but it says he said to Simon. Interesting. He's still speaking to Simon, and he's not ignoring the woman like she's not there. It's not like she's invisible. He's not disrespecting the woman. But he's still got something to say to Simon as he's looking at the woman. Why is it so significant that Jesus is looking at the woman? Well, let me say why. Because Simon isn't. It's so significant that Jesus is looking at the woman because Simon will not. Maybe, perhaps, Simon is afraid that if he even looks at the woman that he'll be unclean. That's very possible. Like, oh, this man is touching that woman. I won't even look at her. But Jesus tells him, Simon, look at her. Look at her. Now, I don't think he said it like that. I don't think he's like, look at her, you know. But I think he's just like, Simon, look at this woman. I see her. I'm going to look at her right now. Do you see this woman? That's significant. He's telling him, get your eyes off of me. Remember how his condemnation was focused on Jesus. His brows were furrowed and he was just vile towards Jesus. And Jesus says, stop looking at me. Join me. You see this woman? Look at her with me. Okay? That's huge. And then he goes on. When I entered your home. Now he's talking he's talking to Simon while they're both looking at the woman. And Simon's probably forcing himself to look at her. When I entered your home, you didn't offer me water and wash dust from my feet. And then he describes what she did, how she washed his feet. I put it in gray because I want you to focus on the message for Simon. When you didn't greet me with a kiss, but she came in. She's not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head, but she's anointed my feet with rare perfume. So look at them all three together. You didn't offer me water to wash dust from my feet. You didn't greet me with a kiss. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head. He's focused. He's speaking to Simon, but he's saying, look at the woman with me. Okay? What is going on here? Jesus is giving a powerful list, this debt ledger, but he's using the woman not in a bad way. He's offering her, like the story, as an illustration. And he's giving this debt ledger, this list. Jesus has even done what is customary. As he came in, he didn't tell this story without permission. That's a first century faux pas. If I were to start speaking to Jeff in his own home without permission about the way he did things in the house, right? That would be wrong today. But Jesus asked permission. And so Jesus shows the right way and says, listen, these are things you didn't do, brother. You have a debt ledger. But don't be afraid. Don't be worried, because guess what? I'm a debt forgiver. He says, therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven. While both their eyes are still on the woman, while both of them are staring at her, Jesus lifts up this situation with a woman before Simon to say, maybe you've never seen forgiveness before like this, Simon. I want you to watch how it happens. She came to me today to be forgiven. This woman's been bearing these burdens, and now I want to show you before you, this is what a contrite and a broken heart looks like. And this is what it looks like to be forgiven. She is forgiven. Now you might think to yourself, is this the first time this has ever happened? No. You go back to Luke chapter 7, you'll see that Jesus had the same encounter with a paralytic that they brought down from the ceiling. Remember that story? And the very first thing Jesus said to that paralytic was, son, your sins are forgiven. And the Pharisees went nuts, right? How can he say such things? Jesus is doing it again. Because Jesus was showing them that, you know, I don't just know your thoughts. I am the I am. So, you know, we know Descartes' little saying, I think, therefore I am. Jesus' saying is, I am, therefore I know what you're thinking, okay? And so that's what he's doing here. He's basically saying, I know what you're thinking, but I want to change your thoughts, Simon. I want to show you a person who comes with true need in their life, and I want to show you what forgiveness looks like. And so Jesus shows himself to be the debt forgiver, the great I am, the only one who can do this, the one that can bring true forgiveness. And trust me, folks, it's not to put it in the face of Simon. It's not to make Simon feel badly. No. It's an invitation to say, Simon, you need this too. This invitation is for you as well, brother. And so we see, back to the text, therefore, what does he say? Her great love has shown this, that she's been forgiven. Whoever has been forgiven little loves little. Okay, that great contrast, right? Great and small, great and small. And again, we get caught up on the great and small. Is it because the woman greatly loved Jesus that she was forgiven? No. Remember, it's by grace you've been saved. It's not anything we do that earns the forgiveness of Christ. It's simply coming to him with what little we have, which is nothing, and laying ourselves before him and saying, I don't have what it takes. Let me give you an example of why I believe that Jesus was after Simon's heart. It's because there was another top-tier rower in the Bible, first stringer, who fell from grace and who came to God. It's in Psalm chapter 51. This stand is driving me crazy. And it's a guy named David. And he was a man after God's own heart, as it says. And he said this in Psalm 51, have mercy on me, God, because of your unfailing love, your great compassion, blot out the stain of my sins. Wash me. I've recognized my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. Against you and alone I've sinned. I've done what's evil in your sight. I was born a sinner from the moment my mother conceived me. You desire honesty from the womb, teaching me wisdom even there. Purify me, wash me, give me back my joy. Don't look at my sins, remove the stain. Create in me a clean heart, renew a loyal spirit within me. Don't banish me from your presence, and don't take your spirit from me. This encapsulates what I believe we saw in the woman. But you see, it's a painting of what could be for Simon, because Simon's a first stringer. He's one that doesn't consider himself, and you know, the woman, by the way, is just one of those pickle boat racers. She's one of the leftovers, right? But Jesus is putting him there. But what does David say is the most important thing? The sacrifice that you would want is not a burnt offering, Lord, verse 17, but the sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit and a contrite heart. You will not reject those two things, oh God, right? And that's why Jesus is like saying, look at this woman. This is classic broken and contrite heart. Simon, this is how you need to come to me. This is your greatest need, brother, to come to me in this way. That's what I want for you. See, you see how we kind of lose Simon in the whole story? We really do. So here's my thought. What is Jesus saying, folks? What is Jesus saying to Simon, and what is he saying to you? First thing that Jesus is saying to Simon, just by accepting his invitation to come over, is that you are seen. You are seen. Even with all his false pretenses, he's saying to Simon, and I believe he says to the woman too, but we're just focusing on Simon, and he's saying it to you. I see you. No matter what your false motives are for wanting me in your life, I see you. And sure, I'll come over. But here's the point. I want to come in, but am I invited? Am I invited? We tend to get real comfortable in our religion, folks. We tend to get real comfortable in our ways of thinking. And before we know it, Jesus is no longer invited to speak into our thoughts and speak into our lives and even to come into our home. So I think Simon's encounter with Jesus teaches us that we need to be in a regular rhythm of inviting Jesus into our home so that he can do what he does, turn our world upside down, get us to think differently. Here's the next question, the thing Jesus is saying to you and me and to Simon. You are heard. Jesus is listening. He is watching. He is being a part of a dinner party. He is hearing what's on Simon's mind, right? But here's the thing I think Jesus asks you and me today. I know your thoughts. I don't know just what you say out of your mouth and watch just your actions. I know what you think. So can I speak to those thoughts? Can I speak to what you're really thinking? That little 2% that very few people ever hear? That's what I want to speak to. And that's why Jesus cared enough to speak to Simon's thoughts. And he cares enough to know exactly what you think all the time. Are you comfortable with that? Being heard like that? You are being heard. Are you a willing participant in saying, Jesus, speak to my thoughts? The next thing Jesus is saying to you is, you're known. I know you, Simon. I know how you are. And yet I still came over. I know you. Put your name in the list. And yet I still want to be in your home. And I want to walk with you, and I want to speak. But here's the question for you. Jesus is saying, I'll reveal your need. I will. And I'll do it gently. I won't berate you. Many of us read this story with Simon like Jesus is berating Simon. He's not. I'll reveal your need, but will you listen? Will you go beyond just hearing me, and will you listen and take it in? And finally, Jesus says to you and me and to Simon today, you're forgiven. You can be forgiven. You can be forgiven, but, and it can be this, complete and final, but will you receive it? Will you receive it? What you have at the end of the story here with Simon and the woman is two different receptions. The funny thing is we know what the woman does. She came there, and by the way, this is a different story, I think, than the one that we see in John, in the book of John, where it's towards the end of Jesus' life, towards the cross. This is a different woman, I believe. Because she comes there seeking forgiveness. She came there with that in her heart. And she comes with that, and she gets it, right? But Simon, we don't know. It's like the end of the book of Jonah. We don't know how it ends. Jonah's just sitting there pouting, and God offers him the world, and then the story ends. But that's where Simon is. We don't know if he receives it. We don't know if Simon joins Nicodemus in belief. But it's interesting that Jesus is saying the same thing to you. Jesus is saying to you today, you are seen, you are heard, you are known. Forgiveness can be yours right now. Some of you have received it, some of you have not. Because you know yourself. You know what's in your head, and you've seen things. And so that keeps you in your mind and your thinking away from Jesus. But Jesus is saying, no, I've broken down all those walls. I'm right up on you. I've got it right here, and you're forgiven if you'll just receive it. So I want to end with this verse and then a song that I pray that will really open your heart to just give yourself to Jesus again. Whether it's for the first time, like the woman, or whether it's for the first time, like Simon, who could have received Jesus, but we don't know. But his thoughts and everything going on in his heart and his mind were keeping him from Jesus. This is the verse. Hebrews 10:23 says this in the ESV. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And what I love about this verse is that we hold fast. We hold fast to this confession, to what Jesus, what brought us to Jesus at first, because we know that we stay faithful because he's faithful. We hold fast because he is the one that holds us fast. He holds us fast. So no matter how much you've gotten off track, no matter how much maybe you've missed the mark and your motives have been off with Jesus, I want you to know Jesus says, I've been walking with you. I still come to your house. I still know your thoughts, and I still love you. And so my forgiveness is right there for you. All the while that you have been faithless, I've been faithful. You don't have to despair. Sure, let the tears roll, bring them to my feet, but know that I will hold you fast. So I want you to use this song as we sing and listen. It's a time to pray and to commit yourself to him, okay? Let's just go ahead and close our eyes. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your faithfulness to us. When we think we have it all together, and we may even think we know the truth about life and about godliness, and yet, if we've got you wrong, Jesus, we are not secure. And yet, all the while, Jesus, you are faithful. So, thank you for holding us fast. Speak to us as we listen to these words, and may we respond as you wish. In Jesus' name.